The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. A little later on in the show, Sid Lowe will be here to talk all things La Liga. We start, though, in the Carabao Cup that saw Spurs book a place in the quarterfinal of this year's competition, beating Chelsea 5-4 on penalties after it finished one apiece after 90 minutes. Here to talk about the game, Frank Leboeuf, Julien Laurent and Shaka Hislop. Where do we start? The tactical masterclass from Mourinho, the performance from Mendy. No! We start about Eric Dier running to the toilet and Jose Mourinho running after him. That is brilliant in so many ways. Shaka, have you ever... We've seen players go to the bathroom before. Sergio Ramos, I remember, did it in the past. But to have Mourinho running after him to tell him to hurry up was brilliant.
It's phenomenal. I can't remember. I mean, you mentioned Sergio Ramos. I don't recall that at all. I don't recall seeing anybody during a game leaving the pitch to go to the bathroom. I fully admit, though, at Newcastle, Les Ferdinand got locked in the bathroom at halftime during a game, and we had to start the second half with 10 men while we figured out how to get Les out. But I've not seen anybody have to leave during a game. That was great. What was Mourinho going to do? Was he going to help him out somehow?
I'm not sure how far we can go down this road without getting into trouble. But I'm sure Eric Dier knew there was a match still going on. Frank, have you ever felt the need to do this?
No, I'm a star. I don't go to restrooms.
No,
so first, you know, you have to know that.
You're like the queen.
Yeah, of course, exactly. No, but I was very fortunate to have one of my teammates, and it was when I was very young in an amateur club. We didn't have the time to go to the restrooms. That was another story. I was pitiful with him.
Wow.
Yeah, I tell you. Yes, but no, I never seen that. I never seen it in my life. And again, like Shaka said, what Mourinho did to Dier, except hurry up. And I think, and I'm sure that Dier was really rushing the thing, but what can you do? And that's stupid. Yeah, maybe giving him some papers, toilet paper that he was missing. I don't know what he can do.
This is ESPN FC at its best. It's like we dreamt of this moment forever.
Well, that's your question.
I know, exactly. Okay, let's talk about actually what happened in the game. Of course, we saw Chelsea go up early, Spurs coming back into it in the second half. Jules, what I thought was interesting, again, maybe away from what happened on the pitch, was the spat between Lampard and Mourinho on the sideline.
Yeah, clearly Mourinho not being happy of how loud either Frank was or his coaching staff. We saw that, remember, last season after the restart at Liverpool, mm-hmm. where Lampard and Klopp had a bit of a moment as well, a bit of tension when they were accusing each other to be too loud, and there was a bit of swearing, and it looked very similar. But it's just that between Lampard and Mourinho, although when Mourinho was sacked in his first spell at Chelsea, obviously things were not great between them two, but we still associate them of like that great partnership they had in those two seasons, 2004-05. So it was quite fascinating and interesting to see them having a go at each other for being too loud on the touchline in a game like this as managers now.
Yeah, we had a colleague there, Shaka, who was saying basically Mourinho was telling Lampard that he wouldn't be out jumping around if he was losing 3-0.
Is it the same Jose Mourinho who's famed for running up and down touchlines when his team score goals in important circumstances? I don't get it. I don't get how you can contradict yourself so easily and carry on as though nobody notices or there are no receipts. Credit to Frank for feeling that he has the authority to stand up to managers of Jose Mourinho's reputation, of Jurgen Klopp's Jurgen Klopp's as well. But again, you start to tread dangerous ground when you are criticizing a manager for something and then you do it yourself. Jose Mourinho, well, I mean, I'm not sure what more to make of some of his own hypocrisies.
Frank, how would you assess Chelsea's performance tonight?
First, very good first half where they dominated Tottenham. Tottenham were pressured in their own half, and we didn't see Tottenham. Chelsea did what they had to do. They scored a goal. It's why maybe Mourinho was very upset about, because they didn't have a tactic, Tottenham. So credit to Frank and to Chelsea in the first half. But after, very critical about the second half, the way they played. Even if Kante came on after and changed a little bit the way Chelsea was playing. But it's sad to see that team, still, since the beginning of the season, is incapable of playing 90 minutes. So they have to change that, because it's going to be a problem otherwise.
All that excitement in the summer, given the new signings and the money that was spent, Jules, this certainly hasn't lived up to expectations. I know we're only a couple of games in so far. Obviously, the win against Brighton, not particularly convincing. Loss against Liverpool, come from behind against West Brom, losing today on penalties.
That's right, but I think it's a process. That's what Frank Lampard keeps saying. And he's right in a way, because so many new players, some were ready, others were not ready. We saw Thiago Silva, Ben Chilwell, who had either injuries or were coming back from the Champions League, for example, in Thiago Silva's cases. And then a very small pre-season where you don't really have time to work on integrating those new signings. So it was always going to take time, more time than a Liverpool team, for example, who was already ready from the last three seasons, or even other clubs like that. So it's part of the process, but you're right. I think we could be disappointed. I think Frank would be disappointed by the results, also by the content of the games. And like Frank said, not being able to be consistent over 90 minutes and keeping making mistakes, especially defensively. The goal they conceded tonight is a goal you cannot defend like that in a game like this. It's outrageous how bad it is defensively.
Yeah, defensively, how do you explain that, Frank? Especially off the back of that terrible display against West Brom at the weekend.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we say that all season long last season, where we saw so many mistakes from the defense, where they don't talk to each other, they don't cover each other. I mean, the action from Tottenham, from Spurs, comes from the right side when there is a long pass to the left side, which is the right side of Chelsea, where Azpilicueta should have called back Werner but didn't. And then you have a cross. And Tomori doesn't go for the ball. Zuma thinks that Tomori will go for the ball, so he's not reacting well. And then you have somebody completely alone on the far post, Lamela, in that occasion, and score an easy goal where you cannot say anything to Mendy. I mean, he's crucified, 5 yards from the goal. So it's a something that you have to work on. It's not only the defense, it's also the midfielders that they have to work. They have to come back. Even maybe Werner or maybe, I don't know, Abraham or Mount. I mean, Mount was awful all game long. I mean, he's a very talented player, but some players have to wake up if they want to have a career. Right. It's not only a year, it's not only 6 months of career, it has to be more.
Mendy, how do we assess his debut, Shaka?
Good, without being anything more. I think it was important that he got out there, got some minutes, made a couple of saves that you'd expect him to make, dealt with crosses, looked comfortably in the first half, flapped at one in the second. But, it's a good opportunity for him just to get out there, get some game time with his new team. I thought he did what was asked of him. Par for the course.
I'm thinking about Eric Dyer, and I was going to say something, but then I get into trouble. So I'm going to go back to Spurs' overall performance. Jules, what do we take from it?
Well, we'll take that they managed to come back in the game again, and the changes that Mourinho made worked, because in the first half you could not work really out how tactically they were playing, what kind of formation. I thought it was an absolute shambles. It was much better in the second half with some of the changes, I think with a different attitude as well, and that would be very positive, especially after what happened against Newcastle at the weekend and the disappointment of conceding that goal so late. And just to finish on Dyer, he was really lucky that the turn that the new ground is really small, and then the dressing room was straight there, because it could have been another stadium where you've got long tunnels and it's a long walk back
yes,
to the toilet.
That's very true. No clean sheets for anyone in that game. We will move on to what we're hearing from the referees. We could go all day. It's so much fun. It's brilliant. Okay. Let's talk about, shall we, news coming out that referees are being told to be a little more lenient in the Premier League when it comes to handball rules, something we've discussed a lot after those two big calls in the Spurs game and the Crystal Palace match at the weekend. Shaka, for you, is this the right rhetoric to be coming out from the officials?
Of course it is, but it's a rhetoric that should have been there from the get-go. And listen, I understand IFAB recrafted laws, but those laws are open for interpretation and always have been, probably always will be. That's why you see games in England referee different from games in France, different from Europa League games or Champions League games, and even different still at the World Cup. So to have this rigid interpretation of the law as it was written, and then referees using the excuse that, well, this is how IFAB wrote it, I thought took away from the referee's authority, took away from what you ask of and expect of referees, and as a result, you saw the ridiculous decisions as you did over the weekend. And even me sitting watching Newcastle play and hoping they get a point, and you see that decision, and as much as you're happy for the point, you're embarrassed by it. I mean, that's where refereeing is right now.
Is it fair, though, to make those changes now? Frank, say Spurs miss out on a top four place because of 2 points.
Well, it's never the right time, you know, to change something. But when you see that it's becoming, you know, a big problem, a big issue, you have to do something. And again, I said that yesterday on the, during the show, where overall, what you have to do is to make sure that the referee that you're having have to know football. They have to understand the interpretation that Shaka was explaining. That's the main problem and the main concern that we have for decades, ages, where referees don't feel the football. So they can be tricked by the players. But if they had played football, they would have understood, you know, the meaning and why the players were doing that and how to maybe give a penalty for a real handball and not for, I don't know, something wasn't done on purpose.
Last word on this to you, Jules.
Well, I mean, I think we will see this weekend. We will see exactly what happened. We will all be watching or being in the stadium, looking at all those incidents and see what referees do. And I think it's probably the right call to say, okay, it's down to your own discretion. Go and have a look if you want to the screen and decide by yourself. Maybe don't be too harsh. Don't just follow strictly the rule. If you feel like, as the boys have just been saying, you know, your interpretation is a bit different. You know, that it wouldn't have impacted on the game, the handball, or this one would have, and then you give it, but you don't have to give it every single time just because the ball brushed the arm, for example.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. The Carabao Cup then continues over the next couple of days. Manchester United away against Brighton. City, meanwhile, travel to Burnley. And then on Thursday, it's a repeat of Liverpool against Arsenal. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. As promised, Sid Lowe with us. Sid, before we talk about what happened in La Liga this weekend, let's just get your thoughts on those rumours of Dembele to Manchester United.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. When I first saw this, what was it, an hour or so ago, a couple of hours ago, my initial reaction was, I just don't buy this. I can't see this. But it was written by Santi Jimenez in the sports newspaper here, AS, and Santi's very reliable. He's very well informed, and he's not One of those journalists, of which there are quite a number in Catalonia and indeed in the rest of Spain, who jumps at the smallest thing. And so I'm inclined to take it seriously. I think it would be an extraordinary deal from Barcelona's point of view. I think if they were in a position where they were going to get basically half of the money back and lose any control over his future, I think that would be very, very bad news for them indeed. Now, let's see how this pans out. I imagine this is the beginning of a series of discussions in which perhaps a solution is looked for in the short term, but maybe not in the long term. Because, of course, if Barcelona were to allow Ousmane Dembélé to leave now, and if they were to do it with no buyback clause, with no chance of getting him again next summer, and at a fee that is substantially lower than the fee they paid for him, and the figures we've been looking at over the course of the evening look like it's around about half of what they paid for him in the first place, maybe even less than that, then to be honest, that would represent an enormous defeat from Barcelona's point of view. So that said, of course, we've seen so much go on at Barcelona right now that perhaps it wouldn't be too surprising. In fact, it's almost tempting, isn't it, to use Lionel Messi's line when we talk about these kind of things with Barcelona now. And we can use Messi's judgment on Barcelona time and time again, which is to say, at this stage now, nothing surprises me.
But you say they would lose half their money. Said he's been a bust already, hasn't he? Despite the flashes, we've seen so many problems with injuries and his attitude as well, that maybe it would be in Barcelona's favour long term to get rid of him. What I don't quite understand is why Manchester United would be interested.
Well, look, I mean, to be honest, I can understand that point of view. In a sense, I can understand that they might think, look, take some money now while we still can. Let's deal with this. Let's resolve this. Let's draw a line under it while we still can. And I can understand all of that. In Dembélé's defence, I would say, as you rightly pointed out, the main problem has been injuries. That if you have him in the right environment with the right kind of training routine, with the right kind of culture around the club, and you believe that you can get him fit again, and I suppose that's the big question, do they believe that they can do that? Do they believe they can fully integrate him? Then, of course, he's very talented. Which brings us to the other part of it, which is Manchester United's perspective. Now, I think a club like United, who look at a player like Dembélé, may well look at the fact that in 3 years at Barcelona, he hasn't had the chance with any consistency to really make an impact. But on those occasions when he's been fit, he has had a relatively significant contribution. There have been moments when you watch him play and you think, this guy is absolutely brilliant, that the natural talent is there without any doubt. And I think any club looking at him, if they think they can get him cheap, would at least think, look, this might be risky, but it's possibly a risk worth taking, because in terms of talent, in terms of the speed of movement, the ability to play on both wings, the fact that he's two-footed, that he scores a reasonable number of goals, and if you look at his goals per minute ratio at Barcelona, it's actually really quite good, then I can understand why a team would think, actually, yeah, let's give this a go.
Meanwhile, Sid, to Barcelona and actually what happened on the pitch. This wasn't to script, was it? Going out and playing so well as they did in that opening 45 minutes to beat Villarreal, who obviously were poor at the back, but still, you have to go out there and given all the pressure, this was pretty much the perfect start for Ronald Koeman.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it was a very good start. I think the fact that Ansu Fati played such a key part in it, of course, scoring the first two goals and winning the penalty that enabled Lionel Messi to score the third, I think is very important, because there has been a very keen sense that what they need to do, Barcelona, is rejuvenate the squad, is to have... I mean, at first, of course, we were talking about a revolution. Now, that revolution has not been completed yet. I suspect it won't by the end of the transfer window, but let's see. But one thing was for sure, they needed dynamism, they needed a sense of enthusiasm, they needed a sense of something new, and no one brings you that better than Ansu Fati, even though he's actually been around for a year. And I must admit, that was the thing that most struck me, was the other day looking at him score those two goals and thinking, he's still 17. I mean, he's been around for a year, which tells you how absurdly young he was when he broke through at the beginning of last season. And it's true that last season kind of evened out a little bit, that some of that early enthusiasm and excitement was gone. But that's to be expected, someone of that age. At this age, he scored more goals than Messi had when he too was 17. And so I think it's legitimate to be incredibly excited about him. And as you say, that's very important for Koeman, because it's about making sure that it works and you get results. It's a shift in formation. It's also a shift in personnel, although not as much of a shift in personnel as he would like. And I think in that sense, it was a very, very positive debut. I think there are one or two question marks, though, which is that while Barcelona played very well, we didn't yet see very much from Antoine Griezmann, of course, who's been moved into a new position. And, of course, the player that we're going to be watching all year and trying to see glimpses of his attitude, not just his performance, but how happy he is, was Leo Messi. And while Messi scored this wasn't a performance, of course, in which Messi dominated.
Yeah, what have people been saying about that, Sid? Because there's a lot of time dedicated, I imagine, a lot of cameras were just on him for the whole 90 minutes, breaking down every single movement, be it with the ball or with his face.
Yeah, and of course it sort of depends on which side you're on. So we've seen reports suggesting, look, Messi smiles again. Well, you know, immediately after someone scored, it would be pretty bizarre if there was no smile at all. We've seen others look at him more broadly and look at his body language over the 90 minutes and say we saw very little enthusiasm from him. We saw very little sense that he really wants to lead this on. I think even the fact that Ansu played so well has been held against Messi, which I don't think it should be, but it has been, as if to say, well, you know, Ansu scored twice and Messi only got one and it was a penalty. And by the way, a penalty that he could have given to Ansu to give him a hat-trick and he didn't. A penalty which, frankly, was very badly taken. You know, he was very fortunate to get under the body of Asenjo. So that's all been bundled into this analysis of Messi. And one thing I would pick up on, and I personally think this is very good news, and some people will perhaps think that because I'm picking up on it, I'm looking for flaws. I think this is a good thing. But you look at that first Ansu Fati goal. That was the classic Jordi Alba run and cut back to Messi. Messi's coming towards the ball. Ansu gets there first, says thanks very much, and smashes it in the top of the net. And to be honest with you, I think Barcelona needed that.
Transitionally, what does that mean, Sid? Like, for example, could Messi leave in January?
Look, I'm never going to say never, but at this stage, I don't see a scenario in which that helps anyone. I guess, look, we will see over the next 2 or 3 months how Messi feels, whether he is in a position when he thinks, I just want to get out now. Bear in mind that a huge amount has to happen between now and January, not just in terms of what happens on the pitch, but more importantly, what happens off the pitch. There's a motion of no confidence in the current president. There will be presidential elections. He could well be gone. He's a big part of the reason why Messi is unhappy, although I think we shouldn't look at it as being purely about him. And so I think there is so much that could change that I think it's probably premature. But I think it's worth posing that question, but I think it's premature to come up with any kind of answer.
So this is the first time we've had you on since those comments when Luis Suarez made that move to Atletico Madrid. You mentioned it before, you're Lionel Messi. Once again, damning the Barcelona board and the way in which the club is run. When I saw that, part of me thought, what's the point? What are you doing now? How is this helping anything? Yeah. I understand you're making a statement, but you did the interview. Everybody knows how you feel. You are at Barcelona for one more season. You're one of the greatest players that we've ever seen. You want to win things. This isn't helping, is it? These sort of posts aren't helping anyone.
No, I mean, I must admit that there is a bit of me that felt similarly about this. And actually, you know what? There's a part of me that felt that this wasn't the right thing to do from the point of view of Luis Suarez as well. Now, obviously, look, Lionel Messi knows Luis Suarez a hell of a lot better than any of us do. He knows much better than any of us do about whether or not Suarez would have welcomed this particular comment. But bear in mind that Suarez's own departure, he even says at one point, I'm not going to allow this to be, you know, to be about anything else. I'm going, I want this to be positive. And he dealt with it in a way that said, right, okay, I want to enjoy the fact that I'm going, I want to go in the right way. And then it was Messi who kind of had that little dig as well, when perhaps he didn't need to, not just because of Barcelona, but also because of Luis Suarez. That said, I think Messi would argue, and I think Messi's defenders would argue, and I must admit, I could see their point if they did, that having a dig at Bartomeu doesn't actually damage the team at all. And I suspect that part of what Ronald Koeman will be trying to do, carefully, of course, because he's in a very delicate position himself, but I think part of what he'll be trying to do will be saying to the players, right, we look for common ground amongst ourselves. Forget the club, forget the president, forget the politics. This is about going on the pitch and winning. And that is what we want to do, no matter what other consequences it has, no matter what everyone else wants out there, no matter how angry you are or how bitter you feel about things in terms of the kind of political structure of the club, that doesn't matter. Because do you want to win? Right, let's go out there and try and win.
Luis Suarez, of course, now at Atleti. And what a debut he had, Sid. I think you broke it all down in a tweet, didn't you? Do you want to just give us kind of the quick take of it all?
Yeah, so Luis Suarez, and I was at the Wanda Metropolitano, and it's extraordinary to see. He goes on in the 70th minute, so there's 20 minutes left, obviously, with additional time. He plays just under 23 minutes. 22 minutes and 58 seconds he plays. He scores two goals. He hits the post. He wins a penalty. He provides an assist. He provides a perfect pass for another, what would have been another assist had it been finished, which it really should have been. He was extraordinary. He did so much in 23 minutes. It was really genuinely impressive. It was one of those performances that was so good and sort of so crammed into such a short space of time that, to be honest with you, by the end of it, you were just laughing. When he scored that second goal, you just went, this is kind of comic.
Is he going to lead Atleti to the title now, then?
Well, I think there's a huge amount of excitement now, a huge sense that he gives them the thing that they've been lacking over recent years. I think that's probably loading him with a bit too much expectation, a bit too much responsibility, but I think he gives them something different. I think the quality of the team around him suggests that this is a team that probably should compete for the title, or at the very least should be within 5 or 6 points of whoever does win the league. They shouldn't be, you know, 10, 12, 13 points down. Also, the other thing to mention very briefly about that 6-1 win against Granada at the weekend was that Luis Suarez came on and played brilliantly. But before Luis came on, you had João Félix play what I think was the best performance I've seen from him at Atletico Madrid. Now, we saw him last year in pre-season in New York destroy Real Madrid, and everyone got very excited then, so let's not get too excited just yet. But you just wonder, don't you, if a year on, a year more settled, a year older, a year more mature, this guy, who without doubt has enormous talent, could have a really, really good season.
And finally, a word on Real Madrid, their first win of the season, 3-2 against Real Betis. Some big VAR decisions dominating the headlines, the red card and the penalty. We've seen this all before, obviously, Sid, when it comes to Real Madrid and VAR. We saw it a lot at the end of last season. Anything new being said over the last few days?
No, not really. Those people who defend Real Madrid have defended them. Those people who attack Real Madrid have attacked them. I think most people who are neither one thing nor the other have looked at this and thought, well, yeah, of course it feels a little uneasy that a couple of slightly borderline decisions that are VAR go Real Madrid's way. But I think, rule book in hand, you probably look at both and think, well, it might be the right decision. I mean, my biggest problem is that, I must admit, my problem with these decisions, and I've said this a million times about a million decisions, whether it's Real Madrid involved or Barcelona involved or Atletico Madrid involved, is not so much with the decision itself, but with the construction of the rules and the way that decisions are reached, and whether we are making big decisions based on relatively minor things in football matches. But I think fundamentally, you know, there is a red card, there is a penalty, Sergio Ramos takes it, Panenka, obviously, and Real Madrid go on to win.
Sid Lowe, as always, thank you very much. Well, just a reminder, plenty of matches to come in La Liga midweek. Here is your schedule. Real Sociedad Valencia with a 1-0 win today. Meanwhile, Real Madrid in action on Wednesday at home against Valladolid. Barcelona wrap things up away against Celta Vigo on Thursday.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Manchester City confirmed today then the signing of Ruben Dias. Jules still with us. Jules, I don't know if you saw this on the Manchester City website. I think this is real. At the bottom it said, ask our new signing, Koulibaly, any questions? Obviously, it leads us to the fact that City have been linked to the Koulibaly for a while. You talked about it on the podcast yesterday. Why didn't they go for him in the end?
I think it was a very complicated deal from the beginning because of the relationship to start with between City and Napoli, which are almost non-existent since the Jorginho deal, when City really thought they are Jorginho, and then Napoli sort of screwed him over and sold him to Chelsea in the end. And I think since then, it hasn't really been cautious between the two clubs. I think that's an issue. The fact that there was a lot of money, you know, they would have had to pay for Koulibaly, that he was already 29 years of age. I think that's why they thought, okay, we have to look at other options. And Jules Koundé was the one they went for after Koulibaly and had that one offer rejected. And again, I don't know why you don't go again maybe for Koundé and instead you go to your other option, which is Ruben Dias, which is a lot of money for someone who is down to third on your list of centre-backs priorities, clearly. Maybe it's too much money even, but he's a young player with a lot of talent, already played a lot of games in the Champions League, in the Portuguese League as well, with the national team too. He's really strong. I think he's something that they need, but it took them a long time to finally get the centre-back they really wanted.
A lot of talk about Jadon Sancho, certainly coming from the English media today. Manchester United apparently having a £100 million bid rejected. How much truth is there to this?
Well, I was told again not long ago that there'd been no new deal, no new offer for Jadon Sancho on the table at Dortmund. It might come later on tonight, it might be tomorrow. I do believe that United will have one last go and hoping that they can convince Dortmund to sell. It would not be the price and the money that Dortmund won, which is 120 million euros. United are quite adamant they will not pay that amount of money for Jadon Sancho. Then we can debate, are they right, are they wrong to not give the money that Dortmund won for the players, but that's another debate. But right now, I think United might go one more time offering 100 million euros that will very likely be rejected because that's not enough for what Dortmund wants. It's as simple as that. And I think it would be, I would be very disappointed if United miss out on a player like that because it's exactly who they needed. He wants to go there, and yet for 10, 20 million euros, they're going to miss out.
And for Dortmund, why are you selling him cheaply when you can't bring in any reinforcements? That's it, Jules. Thank you very much for all the latest news regarding those transfer rumours. Go over to the website and click on Transfer Talk.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Just a reminder, tomorrow sees the German Super Cup final. Bayern Munich taking on Borussia Dortmund. That game live here on Plus at 2:30 Eastern. Also, we've got Serie A action for you tomorrow. Inter playing Udinese as well. Lazio against Atalanta should be a belter as well. That is at 2:40 Eastern. 2:45 Eastern. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you, as always, for everyone who has been on. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Stay tuned, though. Jules, Frank and Shaka answering your questions on Extra Time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Look at this. Frank LaBeouf, Julien Laurent and Shaka Hislop. What are you doing, Shaq? Just nodding.
I'm saying yes to everybody being here.
Yeah, excited by it all. I notice your lampshades are a bit crooked behind you, Shaq, during the show. You need to straighten them out. Look at that one.
Yeah.
And it's that one there.
Yeah, sort it out.
I will get my lampshade adjuster on it.
Is that not something you could do yourself, maybe?
No, I have a lampshade adjuster.
You're not allowed to touch the lampshades, are you, Shaq? Your house. Shaq or Frank, is the Arsenal fan base correct in treating Lacazette as the scapegoat for last night's defeat? Frank?
What is a scapegoat?
Scapegoat. He's the one who's being blamed for Arsenal's defeat against Liverpool.
Nah. He would have been a defender, has made like two big like two big mistakes. He would have been, yes, my cat, he's here. Look, he's Miami.
Oh, and
he would have been hammered, but we all know that a striker can make a mistake and and I miss a chance, and he can be a zero one day and a hero the week after. So, I mean, he scored a goal and missed one big chance to equalize. But it's not only that, you know, what about David Luiz, you know, kicking the ball, where heading the ball in the middle of the park on the third goal as well. You know, everybody can be also criticized. So it's a team game, and I don't like to point every time you have a mistake or you have, in the other end, a success. It's always a teamwork, and they didn't work enough to beat Liverpool, I think.
God, I didn't listen to any of that. I was just suppressing any comment I was going to make about Frank's cat that would not be Disney friendly. Xhaka, Lacazette, yeah. Scapegoat, what do you think?
I think it's ridiculous. Listen, on the one hand, I understand you go to Liverpool, you're going to have a few chances, and you have to be efficient with your finishing. But in all honesty, I thought Alisson did well. There was one chance, his first, that he seemed to fluff. He tried to dink, but I think the flag went up belatedly, so it wouldn't have counted anyway. And then the second, Alisson just made a good save. How about putting that down to good goalkeeping? Oh. I understand if you're Lacazette and you're disappointed, but I think Alisson just got the better of him.
Jules, with your Arsenal ways, who do you blame?
I certainly don't blame him. Like I said, I mean, he worked so hard. He ran so much to press, to chase the ball. Often he ran just for nothing. He hardly touched the ball, got lucky and scored that goal in the first half. And then, yeah, of course, there's that big chance to make it 2-2. I still think there was a huge gap between the two teams anyway. I don't know how much of a difference that goal would have made. And I come back at 2-2. But I think it's really harsh on, like I said, if you blame him for that defeat when Liverpool was so much better than Arsenal anyway.
Good question. Who is likely to win the Premier League first between Lampard, Arteta and Solskjaer?
Wow.
Let's go Jules.
Go to me last. Because I want to be last.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is Julian first and
Jules,
then Frank?
Jules is the expert.
It's a great question. Am I first, yeah?
You're first, Jules.
Yes.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
In terms of, I think a lot of it will have to be, will they get the players that they want or that they need to be able to play the game that they want and then get the success from it. I think on that level, Chelsea and Lampard have to be ahead of the other two. You could see the structure of the club is very different in the sense that they have one owner who clearly is ready to spend a lot of money compared to the other two who are working in a very different way. And we've seen that this summer, and there's no reason why this would stop now anyway. So I would think that maybe Lampard has that chance ahead of the other two. However, I feel that tactically, the one who's more ready is Mikel Arteta. I think you can clearly see the identity that he wants to give his team. You see the direction that he wants the team to follow and to go towards too, which I'm not really seeing that clearly with Lampard and Solskjaer. So between Lampard and Arteta, I would edge you on Arteta.
I will agree with you, Jules. And I'll tell you why, because I think Arteta will win the league, but not with Arsenal. Solskjaer's not going to win the league with United.
That's a good point.
And the only team he's going to take after United is going to be lower quality than that. Same with Frank Lampard, I think. I think Arteta will get a better club with Arsenal, therefore will win the Premier League first out of those three. Frank Leboeuf.
I can agree with you. I think Arteta has less tools right now than Lampard and Solskjaer. And so he has the less chance to win a Premier League with the club he is right now. But maybe, as Dan said, you know, maybe in the future. But Lampard has a big chance. Not maybe this year because you still have City and Liverpool. But he has a big chance to grow quickly. And it's up to him to find the right formula to when the old players will come back to become bigger this season and have the ambition next season to maybe challenge the two others and maybe win the league. So I would put Lampard first. Solskjaer, I don't give too much chances to stay too long at United. So I will put Arteta second and Solskjaer third.
Xhaka, you have your wish, your last on this question.
Yeah, if we're talking about those three managers with their current clubs, I think it's Frank Lampard, Mikel Arteta, and then Solskjaer third. But to your point, I can more likely see Arteta doing really well with Arsenal over the next two or three seasons, and then maybe inheriting the City job when Pep decides he's had enough. So if we aren't talking current clubs, I'm going to go Arteta, Lampard, Solskjaer consistently in third.
Will there ever be another title race in Ligue 1, Frank? How long until the other big French clubs like Bordeaux and Saint-Étienne are competitive for the league again, and what's keeping them from improving? Well, money, isn't it? Money.
That's the right answer. So it's not much to say that Paris has the chance to have a country behind them, Qatar. And they are very, very rich. And when you're that rich, you can spend the good money and have the result you are expecting. And for the other club, they don't have that money. Marseille is looking for a new owner. Sometimes we hear somebody, but it's not very suitable to the club who has enough money. Lyon has a fantastic chairman, president, Mr. Aulas. But I think there are limits of everything. He's doing great with the ladies, winning Champions League after Champions League.
Oh.
But the guys, they are. Do you see? They're going to see the fireworks. But but I don't think we're going to see Bordeaux, Saint-Étienne, Strasbourg, Nantes in the future. So no. Paris can win the Ligue 1 for another decade, maybe.
Yes,
Jules will know that.
Lacking the sort of fireworks, isn't it, Ligue 1, that competitive spirit? You don't care, though, Jules, do you? You just PSG win every year. This is what you want in life.
I can't even hear what you just said anyway, so just move on.
You're so
I like I like grumpy Jules.
God. What a brat.
Hey. You can tell he's turning 40 soon. He's getting grumpy. Okay.
I've been talking about that. I was driving back from Liverpool last night after the game, and I got a message from Frank Leboeuf. I said, "Oh, Frank is texting me. That's great. You know, it was quite late." And he said, "Happy birthday, my friend. Great. You know, 40 is great age." And I was, "Thanks, my friend, but it's Sunday." But I mean, the attention is the most important here. You know, you can't always get your dates always right, I guess.
Hey, Frank's a busy man.
I'm sorry, it's a schedule issue where I normally put all my friends, you know, birthday, and I brought it wrongly, you know, last year, and then when I sent it, I thought it was the right one. So next time, next year, I won't wish you any birthday.
Yeah, don't bother.
No, it's great, it's great.
No, Jules, God, getting grumpy and grumpier. Spending too much time with Gab. Okay, is there even one club that wants Mesut Ozil, Jules? If no, why? If yes, why?
Nope.
Okay.
No, I don't know. I mean, he earns a lot of money and I don't think he's ready to take a pay cut. So whoever wants him would have to pay that money to start with, and then he hasn't really shown enough for clubs to be interested, I guess.
Shaka and Frank, this is a good question. What's the most memorable way a teammate reacted to getting yelled at by the manager at halftime? I would cry. Did anyone ever cry?
Nobody cried.
I would definitely cry.
I don't remember anybody crying. I'm trying to think. We've had a few like proper meltdowns between manager and player, but that's kind of
right.
That happens every other week.
Match.
That's not an issue. Tell you what, I did see though. One playing with West Ham, Paolo Di Canio got brought down in the box. He thought it was a penalty. The ref didn't give it, so he insisted that he be substituted. And just sat on the field. Harry wouldn't take him off. So he sat on the field for a solid 5 minutes. And we just kept playing. Like, seriously. So the game's going on. Paolo Di Canio is sitting on the field, in the middle of the field. And people are just running all around him for 5 minutes. It's great. It was so good. It was good.
Shaka, a lot of your stories seem to revolve around Di Canio.
Yes, he was a character. Paolo Di Canio.
Frank, halftime stories?
No, nothing really. I tried to remember why Xhaka was speaking, but nothing much that I remember. I just remember one thing that at the end of the game in Newcastle, where, you know, you showed the, not a long time ago, you sent me a fantastic video about me, you know, being so bad, you know, during that game and losing 2-3 or 2-1 against us. It was Craig Burley scored a goal and I made two big mistakes. And I remember asking Ruud Gullit the day before to have a day off, I don't know when. And at the end of the game, he looked at me and said, "Hey, lovely boy, you can count on me. You won't have a day off. That's for sure." I didn't cry because there's nothing much to do, you know.
Xhaka and Frank, what club did you regret leaving the most in your playing career? Frank, did you have any regrets?
Yeah, Chelsea. Right. Chelsea. I would have loved to stay until the end of my career. I came back to Marseille. Of course, it's my childhood, I would say, a club. But I came back because my father was dying from cancer, so I had to go back to the south of France. And on top of it, John Terry was about to play and substitute me, so I had no chance. And the World Cup in 2002 was about to be played, so I had to go in 2001 and leave Chelsea. But I would have, if I could have stayed until the end of my career, I would have. And that's a regret. That's a big regret. Yeah.
Xhaka.
I don't have any regrets. All those clubs couldn't wait to get rid of me.
Oh.
So I just had to leave.
That's not fair. You don't deserve that. That's not true. I don't believe it.
My best friends speak French, so I'm trying to learn a little, but the pronunciation is very strange to me. Any tips? Xhaka?
Go on, Dan. Go on. You go on, Dan. You've you used to live in Madrid.
I know. I got an E at French A level. Learning language is hard. It is hard.
And it's hard because you know what? No, you know what? Because it's hard because you have a worldwide language. You can speak everywhere in the world. You can speak English. So you're getting a little bit lazy, which is completely normal because you don't have to make any effort. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to ask to the Dutch. The Dutch, they speak four or five languages. The Portuguese as well, even if they can speak in Brazil Portuguese. But they have the tendency to be... It's for them easier to learn another language. It's also hard for a French guy to learn English or German or Spanish. But it's even harder for the native English spoken people to learn another language.
Jules, you just speak to your children in French, yeah?
I do indeed, yeah. I do indeed. But they correct me on my English pronunciation, so I think it's just fair that, you know, you can learn all the vocabulary you want, but the pronunciation will always be difficult on certain words, whether you're learning French or English or other languages. It's so different, the pronunciation. I find some words where even my children laugh at me and say, like, "Oh, you said that way." No, it's not like that. It's that way.
You should see my wife when the kids correct her English. It doesn't go very well at all for them. Okay, Xhaka, when are you going to coach for the for TNT? We're in shambles. We need you.
I am staying well clear of everything that's happening in Trinidad and Tobago football right now. That's for another show, all on its own.
Oh. Final question. If you were the coach of France, would you call up Benzema and why or why not, Xhaka? Jules?
I would have never stopped calling him. That's as simple as that. I don't care the story, the sex tape, the Valbuena issue, the influence that, or the bad influence that he was under, Karim was under at some point in his career. He's just one of the best strikers we've ever had. I think it's a real shame that his international career went the way it went. You know, I can understand why Deschamps did it. I certainly would have done differently.
Frank?
Yeah, it's clear that for everybody that his talent is there. I wasn't there when so many problems happened between him and Didier Deschamps. I had the chance to meet him in 2008 and I had a discussion with him. He's an absolutely fantastic person, and I don't know if something changed while during that time and 12 years from now, but in football, in terms of quality, there is no better French player than him as a striker, that's for sure.
Wow. All right, guys, that is it. Thank you very much. Thank you for staying with us for the whole show, boys. We will be back tomorrow for more. It's the German Super Cup tomorrow. Borussia Dortmund taking on Bayern Munich.